Golf in Edinburgh and Neighborhood. The Braids for Brunsfield. By J. Talbot Sharp, Captain of the Brunsfield Allied Golf Club. Everyone has seen or heard of the surroundings of Edinburgh. If the east wind prevents it being the joy of the earth, it undoubtedly is beautiful for situation. Open spaces, charming walks, high hills, and picturesque scenery are the priceless possession of the inhabitants and the admiration of its visitors. Yet is this city practically without a golfing green worthy of the name? If you be a lover of golf, but possess not leisure and a well-lined purse, the accommodation for practice at your disposal is uncomfortably circumscribed. Edinburgh golfers must go from 6 to 30 miles out of town to enjoy their favorite recreation. The only unrestricted spot on which the game is permissible near the town is Brunsfield Links. Of this green, last year's annual says, quote, "As at present existing, the round is one of 7 holes, 2 circuits deciding club competitions. Hazards there are none, the chief difficulty being to avoid collisions with passing pedestrians who use the thoroughfare that intersect the links," end quote. As years roll on, its playable area is gradually being curtailed. It is now almost entirely surrounded by houses and is cut up by an intricate network of footpaths. In summer, on the Saturday half-holiday, it has not inaptly been compared to a battlefield. A novice from the north thus records his experience of a round on the Edinburgh golf course. "I did not go to Edinburgh to play golf, but to enjoy the spring holiday. But my old chum Niblick, who lives close to Brunsfield Links, is a golf maniac, and insisted on me going out to try it before I had well swallowed the dinner he had set before me. We went out onto the green, and then I found it was intersected by innumerable paths from the adjoining streets and crescents, crowded with nurse girls, perambulators, delicate ladies, and ordinary passengers. There were also hundreds strolling on the grass, or lying among the hollows sunning themselves, sheltered from the east wind. Niblick placed his ball on a little tuft of grass to get a better knock at it and graciously allowed me the same advantage. He then shouted out, 'Four!' with the air of a lion killer to warn the people in front, and brought down the bow-legged stick with a sounding whack on the ball, which made it fly into the air like a bird and drop so far off that I could not see it. It was then my turn, and by that time the stemmed crowd of passengers amounted to some hundreds, all patiently waiting till I should distinguish myself by whacking the ball in the same manner. I blushed painfully and made a tremendous blow at it, but merely hit the air and nearly twirled my arms off. The crowd grinned derisively, and some moved on, quite sure that there was no danger for me. Again, I whirled the elongated hummy round my body and brought it down on the ball, and this time surprised myself, for it flew off at an angle and caught a butcher's boy full on the forehead, made him drop like a stone. It was quite a mistake on the part of the ball, for I did not aim at the boy at all. But nevertheless, I turned to flee. But Niblick laid a firm hand on my arm and said, reassuringly, 'He's very likely dead, but it doesn't matter. King James's charter makes us all right, and the infirmary is just across the meadows there. Play 2 more.' I wiped the cold sweat from my pallid brow with a furtive glance at the crowd as they bore off the dead body of the butcher's boy, and then walked forward a bit and hit madly at the ball, but only sent it a few inches. 'Play 3 more,' said Niblick, which was his generous way of giving me an extra shot for everyone I missed. At length, I got the ball away in fine style and hit an old man in the spine. I just saw him squirming in the distance, but marched on like a conquering hero till I reached my ball, with the old man wrapped around it.
'What did you do that for?'
he asked quite unreasonably. 'King James's charter, I loftily answered. Then more severely, "How dare you lift my ball off the ground, sir?"
"You should have cried out. You should have cried for," he persisted.
But by threatening him with the police, we got him to disgorge the ball and continued our exhilarating game. The ball seemed to know that I could not play, for it always flew a tremendous distance when I wanted only a few yards, and demonically sought out all the prostrate figures in the hollows instead of flying right over. I killed 2 nurse girls and disabled a swearing cabman, who luckily had his own cab to take him to the infirmary. There was an old washerwoman, too, but she was evidently deaf and in bad health, so to her it would have been a happy release. At length, in the most surprising manner, my ball flew across the road and into a big pane of glass in one of the houses. Each ball, I understood, cost a shilling. So I crossed the road, rang the bell, and politely asked them to return the golf ball in the drawing room. I returned to Dundee an unhanged murderer, but eager for a fresh trial of the game at Carnoustie or St. Andrews.